EdTech is only getting started, and like education is going to be very critical for a country like ours for how we grow, especially higher education. You're never building the company just yourself. It's basically, can you attract really good people, really capable people, and can you get them excited about the mission? Education is not at all about content. It is about the engagement. It's about how long do you stick to the learning journey, how our completion rates are closer to 75 to 80%, which is, if you again compare, like probably 15 to 20 times higher than the regular programs.
Today's guest on the AJVC podcast is Anshuman Singh, the founder of Scalar. Anshuman, in his previous avatar, was the lead engineer behind Facebook's chat and messages. Today, he's on a mission to build 1 million world-class engineers through Scalar, which aspires to be an online Stanford. Scalar offers industry vetted programs in software engineering, data science, and master degrees, all designed with experts and featuring real-world projects. They're already placing over 1,000 graduates at top tech companies. Please join us in welcoming Anshuman for a conversation on education, upskilling, starting up, and so much more. Anshuman, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Avril. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
So Anshuman, we'll start with the rapid fire. Coffee with Karan goes on for some time, but our rapid fire goes on all year long. So we'll start with, if you could be a professional in any other field unrelated to what you do today, what would it be and why?
I love playing cricket. So while I'd never pursued that interest, but I would have loved to pursue that interest more if I was not an engineer.
It's really surprising because I think, Mazin, we've not had anybody say cricket till now.
Although I know, first step.
People are so crazy about cricket, but you're the first person who said you want to be a cricketer. Interesting, okay. Nice.
Your three favorite things about Hyderabad?
The biryani, the culture, also their language, the Hyderabadi Hindi.
Yeah, quite fun, actually. I think there's this very popular guy on Instagram who makes reels. It's super fun. No, I agree. Okay, so this is a lazy question for us, but one question you would ask yourself if you were the AGBC host.
What next? I still believe that EdTech is only getting started. How EdTech as an industry is going to pan out in the future, I think that's a very interesting, that's something that actually keeps me very excited.
So next, if you had to pick between bootstrap versus funded?
So yeah, we are unique in a way that we went through both phases of the journey. One was bootstrap, the other was funded. I believe the way we look at money is that money lets you attract very high quality of talent. And you're never building the company just yourself. It's basically, can you attract really good people, really capable people, and can you get them excited about the mission? Because what a group of people can achieve, a single individual can never. And with that perspective, I feel that like the funding journey is exciting because it has helped us attract and hire so many exciting people on the team who can break the ceiling for us in some ways. So yeah, I mean, if I had to choose again, I'll still go for the funded journey still.
Yeah, and I think that journey is unique. You started in Pune as well. So
yeah.
Quite interesting. What would you describe your company's culture as in maybe three adjectives or phrases?
Yeah, I mean, impact focused. Everybody's evaluation happens based on the impact that they've made in the last 6 months, 12 months, etc. High on ethics and agency. What I mean by that is, in a way, everybody is given goals, and like because the focus is on impact, the expectation is no matter junior or senior, there is a lot of ownership that you exhibit. It's not somebody else's job; it is your job at the end of the day, no matter how mundane it is. So impact, agency. And I think in general, just mutual respect. No matter who you are, where you come from, if you're part of the company, then like everybody has to be respected.
And what's one truth that few people agree with you on?
People believe education is about just the content. And hence, one of the most common criticism that EdTech gets is, oh, wait, but this content is also available on YouTube for free. Why should I pay for a course? The truth is, education is, I mean, content is hygiene, but education is not at all about content. It is about the engagement. It's about how long do you stick to the learning journey, how disciplined you are, and then are you really being able to absorb it or not? So education is a lot more about engagement and retention than just the content. And that is why schools and universities exist. And that is, to be honest, not very obvious to most people. And hence, we get a lot of criticism.
Yeah, I think this question is interesting because many times the founders believe, and this truth is the company that they are doing. So it's always good to hear that underlying philosophy behind why you're doing what you're doing. And Anshuman, if you could talk us through your journey. You know, you ended up at Facebook, but you also studied in India and you went through that entire role of studying computer science, then getting roles in software engineering, being in Facebook in the US and UK. Can you talk about that early journey as well as what did you observe as differences in the developer culture in India as versus maybe the US or UK?
I come from a small city. My father was in a government job, so we used to just keep getting transport everywhere. So I've lived in almost a lot of cities in UP. My college was IIIT Hyderabad, which is in Hyderabad, as the name suggests. So I studied there for 4 years. My first job happened to be in Facebook, which was very unique because Facebook wouldn't hire from India back then. But it happened because I, just out of interest, I mean, I never knew that it would lead to a job, but just out of interest, I was very active into competitive programming. Okay. So I would compete with other coders out there in the world. And there used to be this competition called ICPC where all colleges would compete and then every country would send out some representations. Think of them like Olympiads, just like you have physics Olympiad, maths Olympiad, yeah. Very similarly. On the college level, there is ICPC. So I represented India twice, which is the maximum number of attempts that you get. And okay. I got approached by both Google and Facebook during that time for their US office.
Nice.
I ended up getting offers from both. And then I fought with my parents to finally end up at Facebook and not Google. So that was my journey of getting to Facebook. At Facebook as well, it was a very humbling journey because even then, Facebook had like roughly 500 million monthly active users. So it was already a big deal. It's just that it wasn't showing up in the valuation yet. I got to work. I mean, and it was a very small setup. Like we were roughly 200, 250 engineers back then. So we got to work closely with almost all of the big names that are there today, right? So I remember my desk used to be right opposite Mark Zuckerberg's desk. The first day he had come and introduce himself. So that was a humbling journey where everybody on the same floor, open setup, no cabins, nothing. You could walk up to anybody, ask for help. My first manager was this person who had built Cassandra. Cassandra is one of the, databases that is used today in a lot of companies. So it's a big deal in the field of computer science. So got to learn a lot there from people who probably are far more capable than me even today. And then after spending like roughly four odd years there, I came back. I mean, I was again very fortunate that I grew very fast there. So I got to take a lot of positions of responsibility and I learned a lot in that journey. In India, one of the reasons of moving back to India was this entire thing that I had to do something of my own. I always wanted to do that, even when I was in college, just that I did not have the money to do it. after having worked there for 4 years, I felt I had enough money to be able to sustain my own personal living and focus on building the company. And education is a problem that I felt very closely about because I come from a family of engineers. I have two younger brothers, both engineers. And hence I felt like if we can fix, I had seen their college education, so I knew how broken it was. So I felt that if we can fix that, then it could actually create a massive impact on the ground. And that's how the journey started. In India, we first started as InterviewBit, which was a free content website for just learning computer science. And that's where the realization that it's not about content, it's more about engagement. And that's where slowly the shift towards the virtual university or online university happened. And that's how Scalar was created.
No,
I was just going to talk about the difference that you had asked on the work culture. Yeah, I mean, look, it's... So one of the things is I do see people spending a lot more time at work in India as compared to US. And I feel one of the reasons for that is that in India, you have a lot of other people who are taking care of all of your other needs. For example, you don't have to cook because you usually households have a different cook. You don't have to clean your house. You don't have to spend time getting groceries because these days there's Blinkit, Zomato, et cetera, et cetera. In US, I do remember that a big chunk of time would also be spent there. So in a way, there is only so much time that you could actually spend at work. People also, the other key difference that I saw was that in India, most of us are very unidimensional. As in, I am great at work, I'm a geek, that's okay. In US, people tend to take pride in the fact on what they did over the weekend, right? So somebody would be a frisbee champion, somebody would be very deep into traveling, somebody would be deep into photography, etc., etc. So everybody had a side hobby which they would be extremely vocal about, and in a way everybody was supposed to have a side hobby, otherwise you were in a way looked down upon. So a couple of those differences that I saw with respect to India and US.
I understand.
I'm just curious, which hobbies did you pick up while you were there in the US?
Yeah, I used to travel a lot. I mean, every year, like roughly a month, so 11, one out of 12 months was spent on traveling, mostly backpacking across Europe or South America. So did a little bit of that.
Did you get a chance to work with Mark?
Yeah, I did. And the reason for that was that in the period of 2011 to roughly when the IPO happened, which was mid of 2012, messaging was one of the top priorities for Facebook, especially mobile messaging, because that was where we were competing with WhatsApp during that time. And it was very clear that, so it's a very interesting story. So earlier, Facebook had this thesis that messaging should not be part of social media. So hence, the chat initially was never part of the Facebook website. This is very early days.
Correct.
And there was an internal faction that believed that that is how it should be. However, there was another faction that believed that messaging should be a part of, that is another way of connecting. And somebody in one of the hackathons built out a very dirty prototype and just rolled it out. And we were very surprised because after the rollout, we started getting like 4 billion messages in a day. That was already more than what Google Chat was doing.
Hmm.
And Google Chat was the leading messaging platform.
Right. Then.
So that's when slowly messaging became the focus. Our team was set up and then we were supposed to build the messages. And then in parallel, WhatsApp came along. There were a bunch of other players like Line, KakaoTalk, WeChat, etc., etc. And it became clear that there will be one clear winner there and we have to be that winner. And hence, like we started building messages very aggressively. Messenger was the app later on. And then finally, when we were not winning the battle, we ended up buying out WhatsApp.
That's an epic story as well. It's a crazy outcome, crazy messaging app. I think one of the most viral pieces of software ever on earth. So, and I think Facebook and Mark specifically had a very good eye for acquisitions. I can't think of any of his big acquisitions that have not paid out well. They've only accrued value. So that's also credit to him on being able to identify very important strategic assets like Instagram as well. Fascinating. And can you talk about InterviewBit a little bit, because it was not a small time period when you were working on it. It was a decently long time. Can you talk about that? What were your learnings through it, and how did that eventually becomes Scalar? Like, what was the transition like?
Right. So when we started IntubiBit, the key thesis was, can we build out a product which every single software engineer is using? And we didn't know how to make revenue, and we actually settled on that let's not think about making revenues. Let's just think about how do we build distribution and retention amongst those users. And we said, hey, look, the top thing that any engineer cares about is growth in job, growth in salary. So why don't we pick that aspect? We actually get them job ready in certain ways. So everything to do with that, let's just build that out. And there, one of the highest engagement platform used to be Duolingo back then. Even today, in fact, if you have to learn a language, Duolingo is a very high engagement platform. So we just translated Duolingo just as it is, but for tech. We got very high engagement, by the way, on the platform. But what we realized was we used to have extremely high drop-offs in people who were beginners or people who would not come from great colleges, where maybe motivation was lacking. But we used to see extremely high retention in top colleges, the top 1% crowd. We then, by the second year and or like third year, we started to realize that we have to make money to be able to sustain now. We can't keep burning our salaries or savings. And that's when we took a step back and we saw, what do we have? So we saw that we had a large distribution of software engineers. And we also have very rich data about them, because not only do we have these engineers, but they have been practicing here. So we also have certain amount of provable skill information about them. So can we then now go and tie up with companies to say that, hey, look, we will help you hire by doing lesser number of interviews, because we have already pre-filtered set of people that you could possibly hire from. And that's how we started with our first revenue stream, which is, how do we start charging companies for hiring? That went on well. However, after a point of time,
you're hiring and recruitment focused for engineers, correct, kind of platform.
Correct. Because that was the only way we knew how to make revenue on that platform. And however, after a point of time, we realized, one is that revenue stream does not grow, and two is that is not why we had started. We left our job and started this. We wanted to be an education company, and then hence we started thinking more about like, what does education look like right now? There were a bunch of apprehensions, because even then, online education was not popular. Nobody was paying for online education. There was Upgrade, etc., but again, low price points. they were never as big as they are now. So there were a bunch of apprehensions. However, just in those days, something like, so there was a company called Lambda School that had started, which was
Austin Allred,
correct, exactly. So he had started with this income share agreement model, where you could enroll in a program which was actually very high price point, but you don't have to pay anything upfront. You pay once you have a job, right? So we thought that seems like a great idea for India as well, to break that initial barrier of how you think about pricing in an online segment. And that's when we pivoted and we said, let's build out Scalar in the initial model of post-paid payment, that you don't have to pay anything upfront. We'll be very selective. But hey, look, once you get to a great career outcome, then do pay the fees. And the fees was about 3 lakhs or so. So that was the pivot from IntubiBit to Scalar.
Would love to jump into the details. But before we do that, perhaps a sort of philosophical question, right? Indians are great at cracking competitive exams, things like JEE and UPSC. But why do you think Indians struggle more with abstract tasks, perhaps like Olympiads or maybe even coding could fall into that bucket? Why do you think it's harder for us to pick up culturally? Are there any things you've observed over the years?
Yeah. So actually, I was sitting with Mr. Murthy as well. And this was when we were discussing that we want to start a college for undergraduate. One of his feedback was that he feels that's a very difficult job in India, because in India, we are trained to crack exams. Right from childhood, like you probably learn, you less focus on learning something which gives you joy out of it. more focused on, hey, what's going to come in exam so that I quickly rote learn it so that then I do well on the exams. And because of that mindset, till the time you're truly in this world where you have to apply things that you have learned, you don't really appreciate that learning is the important bit. So people don't learn for the joy of learning or, hey, look, I mean, I'll be able to do now X, Y, Z in real world because I have learned this new skill. People learn things because they'll be able to do better in exams. Even in colleges, it's more about maintaining CGPA and then passing the program, getting the degree, rather than, hey, look, I mean, I'm learning X, Y, Z, I'll become so much better engineer. Just to draw contrast, because I'm telling you a flaw, but then what happens in, let's say, other countries or Western world? The one difference is, again, if you look at most of the schooling systems outside, they're very, I think in terms of complexity, they are not at par with the Indian education system. However, there is a lot of application element to how you get graded. For example, in your grading, the kind of essays you write, let's say what kind of presentation you did within the class, all of those factor in for the final grade that you get. So it's not, I mean, even if you have to optimize your performance in exams, you can't do that just through rote learning. You have to learn the application if you have to do the well in exams. And because that habit is built right from the childhood, then you're not working just to crack an exam. The learning starts to become also important in certain ways. Sorry, we diverted a little bit, but I mean, that's one core reason I see why people lack there. People don't do it for the love of it.
No, that's quite insightful, and I mean it definitely makes sense. Totally resonate with it. But coming back to Scalar, you guys have quite a few programs. What are some key metrics that you look at before deciding to launch a new vertical or product line?
The demand in the job industry, because for us, one of the things, because we don't index on degrees, for us it is still important that people who are enrolling in the program, they have decent career outcomes. And imagine if I launch a degree or a field which does not have enough job in enterprises or in companies, then people wouldn't have the right kind of career outcomes. So if there is enough demand with companies, then we build a program for it.
My thought process here is it's kind of a balance between looking at what's been popular in the past versus what might be popular in the future and maybe people have not heard about as much. So how much of a trade-off is it between the past and the future for you, and how do you kind of balance that?
So what we do feel is that the trends tend to catch up. So if there is demand for something, right? For example, today, roughly 30 to 40% of our enrollments come from referrals, which is somebody else referring their friends and saying that, hey, you should also do this. So what we feel is that if there is enough demand, if that leads to aspirational careers, automatically that referral engine will get flowing. And the moment that happens, then you start to get your next intake and the intake after that very easily. And India is, again, a very, I'm not sure whether that's the right word, but job-centric, money-centric society. So so if there is a field that is giving you that aspirational career, people inevitably they end up flocking towards that field.
People move in the direction the market's going. Makes sense. Yeah. Talking about the market, coding skills are, and coding courses specifically, there are quite a few of them. There's several influencers who are, you know, kind of marketing these courses. What is your USP? What makes you guys different?
Yeah, I mean, I can start comparing features, etc., etc. But to be honest, at the end of the day, what matters is, what do those features lead to? What kind of outcomes do they produce? So one of the things which, again, you would find in large-scale courses which most of these influencers run, the completion rates of these courses are very, very low. In fact, like it's at par with the completion rates of MOOC courses. And MOOC courses have roughly like 3% completion rate for a 3-month.
That's interesting. So it's like a MOOC course. Actually,
yeah, it's because I mean, you have a live class and there are 2,000 people sitting there or like 5,000 people sitting there, then it's as good as a recorded class. If you have a small classroom live, then that's actually a live classroom, because then you have an interaction, to and fro interaction happening with people. But if it's a 5,000 people classroom, then it's not a live class, it's actually a recorded class. For example, we do master classes. Master classes has like 2,000 to 5,000 people attending at a time. It's as good as a recorded class. There is hardly any audience interaction happening. And hence, it is very hard to then see who is struggling. It is very hard to create a very homogeneous group. I mean, homogeneous group is where you would want to have people with the same kind of intellect and same kind of knowledge in the same batch so that they are able to follow along the content.
Right.
If you have a heterogeneous group, I mean, somebody is unhappy. Either the smart person is unhappy because they're finding the class too slow, or somebody who's not as sharp, they are unhappy because they're not able to follow along the content. So in very large classrooms, classrooms tend to become very, very heterogeneous. And if they are so heterogeneous, then the there is, like, from one classroom to the other, there is massive drop-off that starts to happen because people give up. So the with all of these courses, you'll find the completion rates are on the lower side, typically in single-digit percentages or probably even lesser. With us, in fact, like, we're just doing an audit. We'll publish the I can't name the company that is doing the audit, but once the audit is done, I mean, I'll tell you the high-level data from that audit. Our completion rates are closer to 75 to 80%, which is, if you again compare, like, probably 15 to 20 times higher than the regular programs. And for people who complete, we typically see like 96% plus kind of transition to good careers in tech. For example, average salaries have been like 22, 23 lakhs. Sorry, that is the median salary. Average salary is 26 lakhs. Which is a very healthy salary in tech. I mean, we could do better, but like, it's still a very healthy salary in tech.
Oh, it's pretty good.
So that's what those is leading to. Now if I talk about, okay, fine, if it is leading to that, then what is the secret sauce? Then, I mean, the secret sauce is, hey, you do live classes, but in a homogeneous batch. So you create smaller classrooms where people are similar. You have tracks that are actually tailor-made for people based on their current knowledge. You have, you essentially in computer science, you have to implement everything that you learn. So you have every class followed by assignments where you have to implement something. And we have our own platform where you can write it out and then it tells you whether you're doing it right or not. You have TAs to help you. There is the platform, because we were in the interview bit journey, so we learned a lot of gamification from there to keep people engaged. So all of that is also there on the platform. You have a community. You're not learning alone. In fact, like, if you look at the life of a student, you do a class and then you're part of WhatsApp groups where continuously the assignment problems are being discussed. People are posting their solution, then you're posting yours. So in a way, you're breathing in and out the entire program all the time. It is like living on a campus. And because that keeps happening 24/7, that's why the engagement numbers are higher. It's very hard to then drop off. One other thing that plays in our favor is that the price point is on the higher side, so people can't just give up after having paid so much.
No, and that makes a lot of sense in terms of the USP and value prop for customers. But what about the instructors? How did you convince instructors to join you guys instead of the competition?
Yeah, I mean, one is they get paid more here than anybody else. That's a very crude answer. But to be honest, like, even the instructors, they care about eventually what is happening with the cohort. If I am part of a program where, let's say, my students go on and do bigger things in life, they end up joining some of the best companies in the ecosystem. There is nothing else that a teacher would take more pride in. So if they have seen that track record happen, if they keep seeing it happening again and again, it helps with the retention of teachers. Then they like it even more. And that's been the secret sauce for us. Like, just get good people, pay them well, and have them take pride in the kind of work that they do.
And you've also just not been doing online. You've actually built out a college. Can you talk about that as well? It's a very unique thing.
So there are two different TGs, we believe. One TG is the undergraduate TG, and then the other is the after graduation, once you're working a job, working professional TG. For working professional TG, the reason why we built online was we believe that the opportunity cost for them to leave their job and then learn something and then do something else is very high. In a way, you're leaving the income on the table, and that's something not most can afford. if they were working on the side, right? But like, if you look at undergraduate, there's already a set behavior that I am going to do a program full time. I'm not working and earning at the same time. Parents have also sort of made up their mind. So they're building an online program is actually going against the market. And it's very, very hard to build. So hence we said, okay, fine. If the behavior is that build an offline program, so let's build an offline program. But let's build the best offline program there is. So it's called Scalar School of Technology. And again, very industry heavy. So for example, in a four-year program, we have 1 year of internship built in the middle. The other differentiator is that post the internship, we have plans. We haven't executed on that yet, so hence I wouldn't claim any good things about that. But we at least have plans to make sure that once the students are back on campus, then we invite a lot of non-tech founders to submit their ideas. We select a few of those founders, invite them on the campus, and have them build the company from there. We become their tech team of sorts. And if there is traction, then great. I mean, those people could continue further if they want to. Otherwise, the founders can go and hire more team as well. So being built out from Bangalore in the middle of the tech hub, in fact, there are people like Amod Malvi, who used to be the CTO of Flipkart and is now the founder of Udaan. He's taking one of the courses. So there are people like that who are involved with SST teaching and then helping the students. And the curriculum is differentiated. The program structure is differentiated, built in a different way than your typical colleges.
When it comes to acquisitions, I believe Scalar's done four so far. Can you talk a bit about how these have helped your business grow and what do you kind of look for in each acquisition?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the larger acquisitions we did was for Applied Roots or Applied AI. That was primarily because internally we didn't have data science expertise. And that team did. They were the experts of data science and content around data science and AI and machine learning. So one of the key reasons to get them on board was that. And they helped us massively in the journey to set up some of the content verticals that we have. All of the remaining acquisitions were more or less talent acquisitions. We wanted to hire the founders themselves to come and be part of the team. And their team to come and be a part of the team. And like acquisition was a way of sort of getting them to be a part of the team.
Talking about AI, you recently launched a GPT-4 powered AI teaching assistant. Can you share some results and what you see as the future of generative AI for Scalar?
Yeah, at least like one of the things we have seen is that AI is, even in the current state, for all of our use cases, it's not autonomous, which means you can't just use the AI and let AI be the only option. AI is a more of an assistive tool for us at this moment. So one of the use cases where we've used it is assisting the teaching assistants. So, for example, a student, if they want real-time help, they can get that from the AI, which has actually helped us reduce the number of requests going to the TAs by roughly about 50%. And even if the request goes to TAs, then like, how do we assess the TAs to give the right kind of responses? We've started using AI there. We're now experimenting with AI to design AI-driven mock interviews so that we are not really dependent on a human being to drive some of those mock interviews. There are certain problems in computer science which are design problems where there is no definite right answer. So how do we design the assessment of those questions using AI, where we can give them a sort of a predictive score on the kind of design that you're building. So some of those have started to happen in parallel apart from this. But what we still see is that AI cannot be left alone. It has to be assisted by a human being at the end of the day, which is where the human being is actually marking whether the answers are up to this, or like the AI assistance is up to the mark or not. So we're looking at AI more as an assistant than anything else.
And, you've built so many things and there are so many vectors in the company now. Where are you today? How do you look at the business? And what matters to you the most? And what is it that you measure to know what matters?
The North Star for all of us right now is the NPS, which is how happy are the students. And NPS is a very tricky metric because when you want people to learn more, the moment you make the program harder, the moment you make it more rigorous, the NPS goes down because people don't want to work hard by default. But it leads to better outcomes. So then what you see is then the NPS starts to improve at the fag end of the batch when people start to find good outcomes for themselves, even though while they were unhappy during the phase where they were made to work very, very hard. But at the end of the day, I mean, that is the only North Star metric that we look at, that we need to make sure that people are happy at the time of graduation. They recommend Scalar to everybody else. And hence, most of my time, for example, is spent in making sure we have the right up-to-date curriculum. For example, we have now revised curriculum multiple times during the last year because the market changed drastically. The bar for hiring changed again drastically. I mean, people were okay hiring at X. Now they want 3X skills. So a lot of my time goes there, making sure the curriculum is on point, teachers are on point, students are happy and their concerns are being addressed. If they have feedback, then we are making design changes to make sure those feedbacks get addressed long term. And finally, placement outcomes happen. Our placement outcomes continue to scale as our intake is scaling.
Understand. Can you talk about what all Scalar does today? Like what would be the verticals? Are you at?
So primarily two target audience. One is working professionals and the other is undergraduates. Right. On the working professional side, we have two programs right now. One is software engineering focused and the other is data science focused. Data science also has AI and machine learning as specializations. And on the undergraduate side, there is a four-year program. Think of that as equivalent of a BTEC in computer science. We can't award degrees, so we rely on certain parallel programs to award degrees. So we, for example, get students enrolled in the BSc of computer science of 3 years. And then there's a one-year master's from a European university that you get enrolled in. So at the end of that program, you end up getting those two degrees.
And what sort of scale are you at in terms of what you can share?
Yeah, I mean, so we enroll roughly about 15 to 20,000 people in the working professional segment every year. And the Scalar School of Technology is extremely selective. So for example, last year we got roughly 50,000 registrations, 6,000 paid applications. And out of that, we selected roughly 200 odd people. Even this year, the plan is to be very, very selective. And we don't know what is the kind of intake we would get because it completely depends on the kind of applications we get, the total number of paid applications. The one key constraint there is we never want to let go of the selectivity there. We have to have a very high bar for who comes in.
Understand. So working professionals, undergrads, working professionals, two streams, undergrad, we have a full curriculum, 4 years. The working professional bit is obviously larger because that's what you started with.
Yeah,
that makes sense. 10 years later or 5 years later, whatever is easier or harder, whichever. where do you see yourself? Because you said you wanted to ask yourself this question, what next?
Sure.
And I'd like to take a long-term horizon on that question.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so the way we look at our future is that we think of ourselves having, hey, look, I mean, here are our goals if things go normally, and here are certain loonshot goals. So I'll first talk about the goals if things were to go as planned, normally, nothing out of the blue. We want to be at a place where we have, in 5 or 10 years from now, we have one very successful university sort of a place, I mean, which is equivalent of, I mean, with SST, we're trying to build out a sort of like a Stanford, where we don't do research as much, but we make sure companies are born out of Scalar School of Technology, right? So we have that where very filtered set of people come and they get to great kind of outcomes. Now, to what extent does that scale in terms of revenue? I'm not very, very sure. But we are very confident that it should at least get to the kind of scale that Bits Pilani is. Bits Pilani does roughly 3,000 kind of intake every year at roughly 20 to 30 lakh kind of a fees price point.
Mm.
So 5 to 10 years, that's where we want this to get to. The second goal for us is that how do we make sure that we expand on our current, so expansion, not so much in the form of number of hitting, but making sure that we're able to grow consciously on the working professional segment, keeping intact the placement outcomes. Now, again, what that number grows to be, does it become 50,000 people intake a year, etc.? We don't know. We'll probably mm-hmm. discover along the journey. But making sure that there's a healthy conversion to placement outcomes, that's a primary goal for us. The couple of loon shot goals. One is, we do believe that one of the opportunities in the education side with the advent of AI is that, again, if you look at the kind of education that aristocrats used to have in the older times, was you would have a personal coach. Huh. There would be this personal teacher that you would have all through your life, and hence that person teacher would be able to tailor things according to you, tell you what else to do, what extracurricular to do, et cetera, based on knowing me, what are my strengths, right? That doesn't scale, obviously.
Right.
Hence, I mean, it was limited only to aristocrats, but nobody else.
Hmm.
One of the roles of technologies is to make sure, like, whatever was accessible only to aristocrats, how do you make that accessible to the general masses?
Hmm.
And we do feel that AI gives us that opportunity in a way. How do you create a personal coach, a personalized coach who understands your learning skills and learning ability really well and is able to hence tailor things and tailor the journey based on who you are? And that's something that we've started. I mean, we're at least starting to envision and starting to build, because we have rich data right as of today with so many people working in the online mode. And we believe if we are able to build that, then that is something very, very powerful. It is an extremely sticky thing, because you can't move out of that.
Of course.
Once you have a person's learning model with you. And it is extremely useful and effective. If somebody can make my learning journey far more effective because you're able to customize things based on my skills, that is very, very powerful. So that is, for example, another loon shot goal that we have.
Right.
In parallel, we'll obviously continue to explore more programs, more kind of programs. However, I can't share a lot there yet.
Of course.
I'll share that maybe in some time.
Awesome. Anshuman, thank you for sharing so openly. Just our final question, which is why we call this Founders Unfiltered. What's one piece of unfiltered feedback or advice you got in your journey as an entrepreneur that really impacted the way you think as a founder?
And this is one of the advices we got through student feedback. In fact, in the early part of our journey, around 2020, there was almost some form of student outrage, where there's one person who made a very elaborate YouTube video around how Scalar is a scam.
Okay.
And like, to be honest, if you are building something very, very passionately, that's something that affects you. That's something extremely depressing, that is something that hits you. One of the things that became very clear from that episode was that as much as my intention is important of building the right kind of educational institute, as much as curriculum is important, along with that, equally important is setting the expectations correctly and building the right kind of habits in students.
Mm.
You cannot trust most students to be as mature as, let's say, some of the people that you see around yourself.
Mm.
And hence, from that point onwards, being extremely careful about this, talking to students as much as possible, making sure if there are gaps that we identify with respect to expectations, being extremely hands-on has been a learning. Right? Like, so for example, I find it hard to delegate stuff. I still am I'm part of like more than 1,000 WhatsApp groups of students where I still keep responding to students as much as possible. Because I mean, one learning has been that you have to be in touch with the ground. You have to be extremely hands-on, no matter how big your skill, no matter how big you become.
No, awesome. And thank you for sharing that story. I think it would have been very tough emotionally as a founder as well, because the person on the other side is a student, they're young, they obviously felt pain due to something. And using strong, you know, words like that, especially for a young company, can be a difficult time. And thank you for sharing how you took the positive out of it, and, you know, institutionalized a method so that the experience gets better. Not that the thing stops, but that the structure is elevated. No, that's awesome. Thank you, Anshuman, for sharing. We really enjoyed the chat. We hope all of you who listened in did so as well. Thank you.